All right, Boker Tov again. Welcome, everybody. This is class 110 of our ongoing series. Now, after 2 weeks of Hanukkah, we'll get back to the Siddur, but I see already a few questions. Asar B'Tevet, we'll talk briefly on Asar B'Tevet, which we did. I checked my notes. We spoke a few things last year, some maybe a touch review and a couple other things. It is unusual. This we, of course, did not talk about last year. Asar B'Tevet is on a Friday, as it will be again next year. Apparently. Of course, the Asar B'Tevet will not happen again till 2025. That's one of these, you know, cute, and you play all these, you know, trivia games. So, because depending on the calendar, like Parshat Vayigash probably won't be read in 2024 either. Like, you know, you'll read it twice in 2025, you know, depending on the calendar. So there's no Asar B'Tevet in 2024. Not that anybody cares about that. But anyway, so first of all, why can you have a fast on Friday? Why can't you? Okay, so let's see why you can't have a fast on Friday. It's not exactly, but let me just show one thing. Okay, I quit quickly already. There we go. Does everybody see this? Okay. Engozrim Tanit al Tzibur b'Rosh Chodesh. So, Masechet Ta'anit, which is one of the tractates in the Talmud, 30 pages, about one of them talk about Tisha B'Av and Shiva Esar B'Tomos, maybe one and a half of them. Very little, very little. The vast majority of the tractate, the first half is about when it doesn't rain, which is what we're talking about in the Shema, the Natati Matar Shvem. It actually ties in very well with the second paragraph of the Shema, when it doesn't rain. So they used to have a series of fast days. It wasn't like today. They had water desalination plants, and you don't have to worry so much. But there was a real, real problem. People, you know, died. It didn't rain. So they would have a series, three fasts, another three fasts. The first day fast only in the daytime, then from the night before, then they put more restrictions, seven fasts, and then only the rabbis would fast. So the Mishnah is saying you shouldn't make one of these fast days on Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, or Purim, because you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, and Purim. Now, these fast days were done Mondays and Thursdays. They would go like in succession, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, then Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Monday, or Thursday, whatever, seven. But if there's a series, they're going to do three or seven fasts, Monday, Thursday, and it so happens the fourth Monday is Hanukkah, okay. It's not that they made the fast for Hanukkah. Hanukkah is in the middle of the series of fasting. So the Mishnah says you overrule Hanukkah and you fast, even though it's Hanukkah or Rosh Chodesh or Purim. Divrei Rabban Gamliel. That's the words Rabban Gamliel. I'm a Rav Meir, who's later than Rabban Gamliel. Not that it really matters, but you know, I always like to point out these historical things. Rav Meir is a later Tana from the second last like generation of Tanaim. Depends, there's two Rabban Gamliels, but we assume this is Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, the famous Rabban Gamliel with Rabbi Yeshua, as opposed to Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. They were the grandsons. Then the Siim, there were six Nisiim, basically, from Hillel to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. They were all children of each other. Like Hillel's great-great-great-great-grandson is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. But his son or grandson is Rabban Gamliel, and his son is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and his son is Rabban Gamliel, and his son is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and his son is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. But so normally, the way we distinguish the two Rabban Gamliels, the first one, who would live during the, while the temple is still standing, is Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, the elder. And this, the regular one, Rabban Gamliel of Yavne. This is one when they got Yavne started. He was the very strong leader. Anyways, Rabbi Meir is already the, after the Bar Kochav revolt, they're no longer in Yavne. They're up north. Rabbi Meir says, it's true. Rabban Gamliel says, we're not going to cancel the fast. You have to fast on Hanukkah. Modeh hayah she'ein mashlim. But you didn't fast the whole day. You had to end the fast, Hanukkah now gets dark. The fast should end at 5 o'clock. I don't know. He doesn't say exactly what time. At 4 o'clock, you end the fast. You can't fast the whole day because you have to acknowledge it's Hanukkah. So it's like kind of a compromise. We fast, you know, but it's also Hanukkah. V'chein tisha v'av shechal liot be'erev Shabbat. So this is amazing Mishnah. When Tisha B'Av falls on a Friday, of course, when's the last time Tisha B'Av fell on a Friday? Somebody, Tova, when's the last time Tisha B'Av fell on
a Friday? I don't think it falls on any Shabbos.
It doesn't.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't.
I don't know, 2,000 years ago. Maybe never. That's an, it must have happened. It obviously happened at some point in history. Otherwise, the Mishnah wouldn't mention it.
Our
calendar was fixed in 359. So at some time between the year 70 and 359, Presumably, Tisha B'Av fell on a Sunday. Also, perhaps between the year 586 BCE and 516 BCE, during the 70 years of exile, presumably Tisha B'Av fell on a Sunday once in a while. During the Second Temple period, there's a whole debate whether the Jewish people fasted. The four fast days, which Asar B'Tevet is one of them, the first one, sort of the four fast days of the destruction of the temple, did they fast during the Second Temple? There seems to be a little bit debate about that. I think the consensus, if I'm not mistaken, is they did not fast. Although we do know that the elders, when they built the Second Temple, they were crying. Because the Second Temple was a pale comparison to the first. To the young people, it was exciting, amazing. Wow, we have a Beit HaMikdash, is great. But the older people who remembered, you know, the old home, you know, whatever, they were very upset. Anyways, I assume Tisha B'Av at some point in history did fall on a Friday. The way our calendar is set up, it never falls on a Friday. So the Mishnah says, when Tisha B'Av fell on a Friday, Tisha B'Av, Asar B'Tevet is a fast and new one thing. I don't know, maybe fasting for rain is more important than Tisha B'Av. I'm not sure. We don't think that way, but I think, you know, it meant more to people. Fasting for rain was your livelihood now. Tisha B'Av, like ancient history. But anyways, the Mishnah says we did not complete the fast. We would break the fast on Friday early. We don't, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, they don't paskin like Rav Meir. We paskin like Rav Gamliel, you fast. But still, I think it's important. So now you come to Asar B'Tevet. So Asar B'Tevet doesn't compare it to Tisha B'Av. It's a much lower holiday. Just so people should, obviously, we know it's a much sadder day and it's much worse and terrible things happen. Then obviously, halachically, the stringencies are more. It's like Yom Kippur, you can't wear shoes and you can't take a shower, etc. And also, of course, we fast for the full day, 25 hours. Asar B'Tevet, even Shiva Sarva Tammuz and some Gedalia, we somehow view Shiva Sarva Tammuz, I think, is more serious. Most people, I think it's more serious than Asar B'Tevet, but on a halachic status, it is the same. Shiva Sarva Tammuz and Asar B'Tevet, and they are what we call is just really a minhag. It's I don't say just a minhag, but it is just a minhag. Fasting on Yom Kippur is a biblical law, of course. Fasting on Tisha B'Av is a rabbinic law. So we follow rabbinic laws almost as strictly as biblical laws. But it's important to know there are exceptions. Tisha B'Av is not Yom Kippur. It's close, but it's not quite the same thing. Rabbinic law, you know, eating chicken and meat, we treat it the same as meat and milk, right? Chicken milk. But chicken milk is only rabbinic prohibition. But still, we treat rabbinic prohibitions normally pretty much on par with biblical, unless there's some extenuating circumstance. So Tisha B'Av is a rabbinic fast. But the other fast days, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, it depends on what's going on in Jewish history. If it's a time of terror, in the Holocaust, maybe it was you had a fast, like on Tisha B'Av. But their real persecution of the Jews, you have to fast, for 25 hours, etc. And if things are really good, you don't have to fast at all. Because the prophet Zechariah, the famous, prophecy, the fast of the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 10th, those are Shiva Sarva Tammuz is the 4th month, Tisha B'Av is the 5th month, Som Gedalia is the 7th month, and Asar B'Tevet is the 10th month, counting from Nisan. So those fast days will be holidays. So when the Jewish people, things are great, we're back in Israel, you don't have to fast. And that's why there was a real legitimate Shaila in 1948, and for sure in 1967, whether people had a fast on Tisha B'Av anymore. Today, nobody thinks like that. You know, things are not, we're not in the 67, obviously, since October 7th, for sure not. But we're not in the 1967 glow. I think I mentioned in the past Rabbi Lookstein in his the Koren keynote that they published, you know, with the explanation. So it has an introduction with Rabbi Lookstein. And Rabbi Lookstein mentions, you know, Haskell Lookstein, Baruch Hashem, I think he's well over 90, Rabbi Emeritus at KJ. So Rabbi Lookstein writes that he came to Israel in 1967, just after the Six-Day War. He landed on Erev Tisha B'Av, And he went to daven in Rav Goren's shul. Rav Goren at that point, Rav Shlomo Goren was chief rabbi of the army before he became chief rabbi of Israel. And he says they started to say Eicha, and Kinnat, and I don't know if it was the middle of Eicha. Maybe they said Eicha. Maybe in the first Kinnat they, no, maybe, I don't remember now. But in the middle of the lamentations, the lamenting we do on Tisha B'Av, they closed the Kinnat and they went home. And we're not saying keynote now. It's 1967. The Gula's coming. Israel, you know, all the I don't remember. I'm too young to remember the aftermath of the war. But those are older than me can recall. And you know, the amazing stuff that went on there. We don't have Tisha B'Av. And then he explains why Rav Soloveitchik, you know, didn't go for any of that stuff. And the next year, and he gave the whole shiur why Rav Soloveitchik, who in general was small C conservative. So, you know, Rav Goren was a little bit more daring in his halachic interpretations. Let's say that. But whatever the case may be, you know, when there's geula, we're not going to fast. So that's the question. It was 1948, 1967. Was that the geula? So it's assumed not, as we understand why. But it's not, but it's still pretty amazing. It's way better than it was in 1492 or 1933. So therefore, these four fast days are considered to be a minhag, considered to be just a custom. As a custom, you know, we don't have to be so strict. So we start fasting only in the morning. We don't fast from the night before. And customs, you know, if you have a bad headache, you can break your fast. You know, we're much more lenient. So then the question becomes, this year, when should the fast end? So I tried to convince our shul to daven a little earlier than they did, of course, unsuccessfully, because, you know, that's just the way places operate. I would recommend I saw Dov Linzer wrote a whole response about this, that I would recommend shuls end davening, not end davening by shkia, by sunset. According to some opinions, every fast day ends at Shkia. I don't know if Yom Kippur does. That not. But the other fast days end at sunset. We know we have this period between sunset and what we call Shkia and Seid HaKochavim, and the nightfall or the appearance of the stars, right? So that's the twilight, what we call it in English, I think, twilight. So generally it's assumed we don't know is twilight day or night. So we're very strict. So Friday, we bring in Shabbos before sunset, because when the sun's down, maybe it's already Shabbos. And Saturday night, we don't end Shabbos till the stars come up, because maybe there's still a little light. Maybe it's still Shabbos. So we're strict on both ends, because we're not sure if it's day or night. And since we're talking about a biblical law, when you're in doubt with the biblical law of Shabbat, you have to be strict. So we keep Shabbos for more or less, I mean, it really has to do with longitude and latitude where you live. And in Israel, the period is much less. It's closer to the equator. It gets dark more quickly. But be that as it may, here in North America, I don't know, when I was a kid, they assumed it was 42 minutes. Now everybody moved to the right. So they assume it's 45 or 46 minutes after their sunset. So whatever, we have 25 hours of Shabbos. Rav Soloveitchik, of course, more beautifully explained, it's not that we're in doubt whether it's day or night. It's the period of twilight is day and night. It's both. It's not it's a period that has properties of the daytime because there's still light. It's not dark totally. And it's about periods are night because there's no sun. So it's both. So it's elements of night and day. So the question is, when there's a fast day, the Talmud says these other fast days, you have to wait till Shkia, till sunset, which sounds like it's sunset. The same, by the way, we have the same question on Hanukkah candles. Do you light Hanukkah candles at sunset or when it gets dark? So I don't know how many people here, I mean, most people today, like when they get home from work, whatever, but in theory, on Sunday, when do people light? At sunset, also they light late, but at sunset or dark? Was anybody even aware of the question that there is, so when do you light?
Susan? When your wife gets home.
No, Rabbi Kerbel said you should light between Shkia and Seisakot.
Oh, between. Oh. What's
that about
between?
4:50. That was his.
So I don't know what between means. Either you light at sunset, I guess at sunset, but it's the exact same question. When, so it's the same question. So by the fast day, so I saw Rabbi Linzer, I think, quoted the Ramban. It was of the opinion that all fast days and all rabbinic fast days and at Shkia, at sunset. That's not the generally accepted opinion we hold by. We hold the end at Seid HaKochavim. But there's another big question. When it's Seid HaKochavim? The Vilna Gaon assumed, question, what are you talking about? The Vilna Gaon assumed Seid HaKochavim is 3/4 of a mil after sundown. Well, it's a very complicated area because it's not so complicated in, you know, in theory, just in practice. What do you do and how does it all work out? And the Gemara seems to contradict itself. The Gemara in Shabbos when I'm sakim. Anyway, so a mil is 2,000 amot. An ama is the between the elbow and the middle finger. That's great. Okay. Very nice. And of course, because in ancient world, they didn't have technology, wasn't like it is today. So nobody cared. How much matzah do you have to eat?
Kazayas.
How much?
A kazayas.
What's a kazayit?
An olive.
Oh, it's not an olive. What's a kazayit?
The volume of an olive.
Oh, okay, the volume of like an olive.
Like an olive. Yeah.
Like an olive.
Right.
Like an olive. You know, it's around, looks like an olive. It's big enough. Smaller, bigger. You didn't measure. Nobody measured like today. Kizayit, like a kizayit. Nobody. So, and how big is it? Oh, this olive is bigger. This olive is smaller. My hand is bigger. It's not like NFL football. You know, it's third down and 16 inches to go. And then the guy gets sacked and they bring up there and then you win the game on the markers go by 1 inch. You know, the football they bring up. So they didn't live like that. So things were very different. So, you know, when it got dark, when it looked like it got dark, you know, it's around the size of an olive. Today we live, I remember Rav Schechter telling us because everything is so exact. I mean, the whole world, you know, 1 centimeter off, you can be in big trouble. If it's something, you know, if the plane has something, it can be 1 centimeter, it can be a disaster. So we're so exacting in general technology, so we should be more exacting in halakhic technology. We didn't used to be. So, but that's the question. So a mil, so it's assumed somewhere between 18 and 24 inches is an amma, and to walk 2,000, it's approximately a kilometer, depending, whatever. But the general consensus, that's how fast you have to make the matzah. These things all tie in together. You have to make the matzah in the flour turns into chametz in the amount of time it takes to walk a mil. So we're strict. We say a mil is 18 minutes. But maybe it's only 24 minutes, 22 minutes, how long it takes the average person to walk. So these are very hard to translate into regular time. But be that as, hey, the Vilna Gaon was up between 3/4 of a mil, assuming a mil is 18 minutes. So 13 and a half minutes after sunset, it's dark. And the Vilna Gaon, I would believe Shabbos would end then. That's Seit HaKokabim. And Shabbos is over then. So nobody follows that exactly. But most people don't follow Rabbeinu Tam either. Rabbeinu Tam has a whole different view. That's the famous Rabbeinu Tam that ends 4 mil. It doesn't get dark till 3 1/4 mil, like 58 minutes after Shkia. That's like 72, what they do, 72 minutes after sunset they do, right? A 4 mil. I have to remember all the details. But of course, it's not that Rabbeinu Tam is strict. Rabbeinu Tam holds that Shabbos on Friday begins an hour later. It's not like he's strict. He just has the day starting much later and ending much later. So people, I do understand that certain people I was told there are a Hasidic group because that follow Rabbeinu Tam even on Friday, which maybe it's pitch blackout, but you know, Rabbeinu Tam holds it's not Shabbos. And, most people, the whole Rabbeinu Tam, they only hold it on Saturday night to be extra strict. And the Vilna Gaon's comment on the Rabbeinu Tam was hachush machish. In other words, Rabbeinu Tam said, let's say 58 minutes till about 58 minutes after sunset, it's for sure daytime. And from 58 to 72 minutes or 58 and a half minutes to 72 minutes, that extra 3/4 of a mil, that 3/4 of a mil that the Vilna Gaon says after sunset, 3/4 of a mil is 13 and a half minutes. It's night. So the Rabbeinu Tam says that 3/4 mil only starts after 3 1/4 mil, like after 58 minutes. So the first 58 minutes after sunset, it's daytime. And the last 13 and a half minutes, we're not sure. It's Bein HaShemashot. That's his twilight zone. And the Vilna Gaon said, what are you talking about? Walk outside. You're out of your mind. I mean, you walk outside 55 minutes after sunset in Toronto and New York, it's pitch black. And you're going to tell me you can drive your car because it's still day. That's what the plain meaning of Rabbeinu Tam is. So even though throughout history, Rabbeinu Tam was the accepted view. And that's the main view. It's amazing. It's the Vilna Gaon who really changed. And the main view today, nobody holds the. I mean, nobody. That's an interesting question. If your plane lands late, I'm not answering the question, but I'm throwing it out there. If your plane lands late on a Friday, and your plane lands, it touches down 10 minutes or 5 minutes before sunset, and you get, or even 5 minutes after sunset, can you? That's maybe a slightly different question. Can you get in the cab? And the cab will be driving home for half an hour, according to Rabbeinu Tam. You're home before Shabbos. So can you rely on Rabbeinu Tam? I can't answer that question. But that is an interest. I mean, Rabbeinu Tam is Rabbeinu Tam. He's not like a nobody. But anyways, these are fascinating questions. I didn't want to spend so much time on this. But so that's the question. When should the fast end today? So I think you can, that's what Rabbi Linzer wrote, but Rav Shachter was always lenient on these fast days. When I was in yeshiva at the Kollel at YU, we would end Som Gedalia 20 minutes after sunset, not like here, they ended 45 minutes after. We would end not like Shabbos. That's what they call, I don't know if they still do that, but that was the early, they davened Marv, like 10, 15 minutes after Shkia. And this is Rav Hershel Shachter, you know, because he knows, you know, we everybody knows that. The more you know, the more lenient you can be. So, so all the shuls, you know, they put Som Gedalia, and when do they have Tov at the Beit? When Som Gedalia? 525, because that's when Shabbos ends.
You mean Asar
B'Tevi? Yeah, I mean Asar B'Tevi.
519.
Yeah, so they're like 2 minutes lenient. Okay, so I don't know. I think it can, Shki in Toronto today, I think is at 444, something like that. So I think for sure by 5 o'clock. You can rely on the Vilna Gaon 13 and a half minutes later after, but whatever it is. Okay, that's it. But the custom is we do fast on Friday. And anyways, okay, we should get back to Shema. We spoke last year about the, I do want to mention it because I always think it's so important to mention on a Sarbate, but we, listen, it's hard for us to, and the truth matter, I know that many people who, it's very interesting. Mark Shapiro was the first one who really brought this to my attention, because I guess I grew up in I live in a bubble, and sort of a bubble, right, that there are many observant Jews who don't fast on Sarbat Tevet, Shiva Sarbat Tammuz, many people, especially women. And especially in the Hasidic world, he says no woman fast on these fast days. It's unheard of that a woman would fast on. And then when I first heard that, I was like, what do you mean they don't fast? Like, it's in the Shulchan Aruch. What do you mean don't fast? Well, religious Jew fast. But it's really amazing. And then Mark says, and I know we've had it on our trips, some of our trips, we've flown last year to Sarbat Tevet, and I'm actually blown away. I don't mean to criticize anybody. I'm just saying people, men, even men with like payas and stuff. I mean, we eat on these fast days sometimes. Listen, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik wanted to do away with these fast days. Because as we know, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was very strict on Pikuach Nefesh. And he felt that we are all weak today, you know, Nikatnu Adorot. It's probably the opposite. We're probably physically stronger, but we won't go there. So Rav Chaim wanted to do away with all this fasting. So I understand in Bris, the women are not allowed to fast in the Bris community. I don't know if the men fast. Maybe the men don't fast. Tisha B'Av is different because it's Ramigla, but these minor, as always referred to, minor fast days, you know? So the minor fast days, they don't fast. That's an interesting, I don't know, I was brought up in the more, you know, you fast, there's six fast days, and a Jew fasts on all the fast days. No, I don't, but okay, whatever.
Why isn't the fast day advanced though?
You're allowed to fast. I mean, you're not normally supposed to go and fast so much on Friday, right? Normally, but okay, this is an exception. If the Mishnah says even Chanukah Purim, if it comes up, we listen. There are only so many manipulations we can make in the calendar. We had to make our calendar so Yom Kippur can't be on a Friday or a Sunday. I mean, the big things the calendar did. We don't want Yom Kippur on a Friday or a Sunday because we don't want 2 days in a row like that. We won't get into that. And we don't want Hoshana Rabbah on Shabbos. That was like, whoa, who cares? But no, because there was big fights about Hoshana Rabbah. The Sadducees didn't accept Hoshana Rabbah. So the rabbis wanted to make a big deal to make sure we'd never skip Hoshana Rabbah. Shofar knew we skip it this year. That's okay. Rosh Hashanah can fall on Shabbos. I was talking to my nephew, Josh, the other day, and I don't know the answer to this question. Maybe other people must. I'm sure some people I don't know. Was there ever a time period in Jewish history where they didn't blow shofar on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah was only one day? In other words, what came first? The extension of Rosh Hashanah to 2 days or the not allowing shofar blown on Shabbos. Because if this 2 days came first, so it's not such a big deal. So you blow it. I know it's only rabbinic and we're getting rid of a biblical mitzvah, but still, at least you hear shofar that year. To go a whole year without hearing shofar, Hoshana, that would be, that would not be good. But Hoshana Rabbah you can't make up. But anyway, so they have to manipulate the calendar to do that. So that's why Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh is not always on Rosh Chodesh. In other words, Rosh Chodesh is not always on the astronomical new moon because we got to play around with dates. I guess Tzar B'Teva falling on a Friday. There's the famous cup of the Abud Raham. I think a lot of people have heard this comment, although most halachic authorities reject this comment. And that is that if a Tzar B'Teva would fall on Shabbos, which in our calendar it never does, you would fast because Yechezkel said the Etzem. Hayom Hazeh, just like on Yom Kippur, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, we fast. But so the Abud Raham, who's one of the early commentaries on the Siddur, who we've often quoted, says that you fast on Asar B'Tevet if we were to fall on Shabbos. But I think most people disagree. It hasn't happened. So, you know, the question's sort of a moot question at this point. But anyways, so that's why. Listen, according to Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, you would end the fast at 3 o'clock today. And the Tisha B'Av early. Kal v'chomer, you're going to end the Asar B'Tevet. So I'm saying, but even according to the accepted view that Rabbi Meir, we don't end early, but we don't have to be strict when Seid HaKochavim on a minag. This is a minag. To wait till, and it's not right. It's on Shabbos. It does take away. There is concern. So I don't think you're not machmir if you end the fast at 5:20. You're mekel. Like many chumras, many stringencies is a stringency in area A, but it's a leniency in area B, right? That's what people don't understand. You know, I'm very strict about certain things. I mean, you're very lenient about other things. Right, so if you're very strict when Asar B'Tevet ends, that means you're very lenient on honoring of Shabbat because you're not supposed to be hungry when you're honoring Shabbat. So I personally think I don't want to say anything. I don't know, but I say it anyways. I think Shul should be ending half an hour earlier than most are going to end. It dawned upon, I'm not going to do this, but it crossed my mind. Maybe I should organize my own minyan to end half an hour earlier, but I think breakaway minyanim is a worse problem. Splitting the community is worse. Not that it splits the community, but whatever. So I don't know, Tova, all the Thornhill minyanim that they have in people's homes. Very common in Thornhill, I think, right? Still, people home, whatever. So I don't know if any of them, I won't mention the name. People in Toronto will probably know. There is somebody who lives in our area who has a minyan in his house every Friday night and Saturday night. And I told him this. I called him yesterday just to let him know. He thanked me very much, and he pushed up his minyan 15 minutes to make it a little bit earlier. But
my question, though, was that for Tanit Esther, we advance the fast. We don't change the calendar. We just advance the fast to the day before.
Tanit Esther could advance on a Friday. No. When Tanit Esther falls on Shabbos, right, when Purim is on. So once we're moving a fast, when right. Purim is Saturday night, if we're moving the fast already, we move it to a Thursday. Correct, because we don't like fasting on Friday. But if it would be that's only because we're already moving it. It's already not really, I mean, the whole Tanit Esther is all made up. When did Esther fast?
Right.
On Pesach. When did Esther fast? On Pesach.
She fasted, right. And it was a three-day fast.
Yeah, that's people don't realize that. I mean, there's a lot of connections between Purim and Pesach. Esther fasted on Pesach. Tanit Esther is the lowest fast. It's I don't even know if it reaches a stat. I guess it is a minag, but it's the lowest status fast, and we're the most lenient in when you can break the fast. And so it's symbolic. The whole fast is symbolic before Purim. So yeah, if we're moving it, we're going to move it to Thursday. But if the day falls on Friday, I imagine if Tisha B'Av, if our calendar worked in a way that Tisha B'Av could fall on Friday, Tisha B'Av would fall on Friday. Just we don't have it. Listen, I mentioned 2 years ago when I gave my shiur on Tisha B'Av, if anybody was there or remembers, that I didn't quote the Mishnah. They have to look it up. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to fast on Sunday because you're not allowed to go from Simcha and Tanug to Tsar. You're not the transition from, you know, partying like a king. And the Mishnah even says when we do fast on Sunday, your shalashudas can be Shlomo HaMelech, the suda of Shlomo HaMelech. It's Shabbos. I don't care that it's Erev Tisha B'Av. You can eat like Shlomo HaMelech. But the Mishnah was opposed to fasting on Sunday. So I don't quite know. I spoke about this two years ago. I don't remember everything I said. I have to look at my notes. But the Mishnah says you're not supposed to fast on Sunday. We know half the years because when Tisha B'Av's on Shabbos or Sunday, we fast on Sunday. But whatever, you know, we can't do everything in the calendar. So it would probably be better if Tisha B'Av would be on a Monday, but it never is on a Monday.
Rabbi, I didn't want to tell you that I was reading up above this last night because I can't go to shul, so I dominate home. So I don't know. I can't even remember whose website it was, but somebody said exactly like you were saying.
So I'm not the only one who says this. Good. I'm happy to hear that.
I'm sorry, I forgot, but they even said something like you should treat it like it was an early Friday in the summer.
Like a Friday in the summer, early Friday. Yeah. Okay. Can you make early Shabbos? So that's another question.
Yeah.
Can you bring, I just don't know who's going to go to a 2:30 minyan for mincha. Like early Shabbos, you know, and now early, like by plug a mincha. I don't know when plug a, if you want to be strict, which you should be, which, you want to make mincha before plug and, Marik to bring in Shabbos early. So no, already Shabbos is early. Shul's at 4:15. How early can it be? But you are correct. There are some people who say if you bring in Shabbos early, then I don't think that's a, sort of the accepted view. But you bring in Shabbos early, you know, you finish at 3:30 in the winter, you know, why not? And now early, bring in it early so you can eat, make Kiddush at 3:30. Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I'll say something. It's a little bit, you know, don't quote me on this, of course. Otherwise, so why am I saying it? But okay, don't quote me. There is a difference between Halachic Judaism and Orthodox Judaism. Let's just put it that way. Or in other words, a lot of things that are done in Orthodoxy. Orthodoxy is a social movement. It's not a halachic movement. That requires much more. Now, says, of course, it's connected to halacha. I'm not the, not like it's anti-halacha, God forbid. But Orthodoxy is not a, it developed as a social movement, as a response to reform. It's not a, and many things that are done in Orthodoxy were done for, because of the, you know, Chadash Asr Min HaTorah of the Chatam Sofer. That's like against the Torah. What do you mean Chadash Asr Min HaTorah? We always have innovation. What are we talking about? Chadash, new things are forbidden. That's ridiculous. Of course not. But in the battle with reform, so there are all kinds of things. People don't know, and when you're dealing with people who are not so learned, the more learned you are, the more lenient you can be. That's, everybody knows that. So most people are not so learned. So shuls are very fit. They're going to start doing weird things. And that is true in halakha. Halakha is concerned when you do things that are allowed. The Gemara often says that. It's really allowed. Halakha v'ein morin kein. This is the law, but you can't say that in public. Because people don't understand. They get all confused. But people in the know, no. So very, it would look really strange if we brought in like an early, people would go crazy and they say you're not religious, and maybe it would have negative side effects. Maybe it would impact things negatively. So maybe there is good reason for it. But you have to realize that not everything done in quote unquote in the Orthodox world means it has to be done al pi halakha. And if you're looking al pi halakha, so we have a very learned group here. So we say exactly as it is. Okay. This is not a halakha, this is not a halakha class, not halakha lemaisa. I'm just a practical law. I'm just telling you ideas and views. And I told you right away, we don't accept it. Rabbi Meir's view was not accepted by the Shulchan Aruch, that we don't fast all day Tisha B'Av. But I think it's fascinating to know about the view. And when does it come into play? It's one thing to say we don't do that on Tisha B'Av, but Asar B'Tavid, and then when does it get dark? Anyways, I said this, it's good. I only realized this after I named this class Mitzvot in Exile, because I wanted to get back to Shema. I figured, but actually that's good for Asar B'Tavid also, because Asar B'Tavid is the beginning of the exile. I was planning to talk about Hishamru Lachem Pen Yitel Vavchem V'Sartem Vavotem. We'll see how much we get there in the Shema. But the other thing I very briefly wanted to mention, because I do think it's always important on Asar B'Tavid, is I'm sure some people know that Asar B'Tavid was originally part of a three-day fast. We used to fast the 8th and the 9th and the 10th. And those who were paying attention, those who said Slicha this morning, that's A, those who said it, that gets rid of half the people. And then gets rid of the other 80%, those who understood what they said in Slichot this morning. We should do for Slichot like we do on Kinot. But see, that would be unorthodox, right? 50 years ago, today, every shul I know of in the Orthodox world today doesn't say all of the Kinot. They take 10 Kinot and they explain them for 20 minutes. 40 years ago, Zev Kaufman probably remembers an incident that happened in Toronto in 1996 on Tisha B'Av in a shul that they did explanation, and there was an outburst because what do you mean? The keynote in Europe, everybody just mumbled the keynote. Who cares if you understood it? That's the way it was always done. And somehow this changed because Rabbi Soloveitchik was the first to initiate this change in Boston, but he would just sit all day and explain keynote. Now everybody knows it's meaningless to mumble keynote you don't understand. It's much more meaningful, and you can go for 3 hours, 10 keynote. You could do one keynote in 3 hours. Okay, that's too much for people. So they do 10 keynote for 3 hours. Beautiful. So they skip 35 keynote. Who cares? It's much more meaningful. The problem is we don't do that at Slichos. We have to do the same thing at Slichos. Say one Slicha a night or in the morning, whenever you say Slichos. That's the other thing Orthodoxy changed. See, here's where Orthodoxy went against Halakha. To say Slichos at 10 o'clock at night. That's the new spangled style, new style everywhere. It's not really, again, I understand all of Slichos is a minhag. I get it. But that's not the way it's supposed to be done. I'm guilty too, by the way. I'm not such a tzaddik. I also often go at night, but it's not really the proper way. And there is something, I mean, my father lost his father at the age of 9. But he said one of the things he remembers, Tov, remember he ever said that, one of the things he remembers as an 8-year-old, 7-year-old kid, his father wake him up at 4:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning to say slichos. So we're a bunch of lazy bums, spoiled brats, you know, and we're rich American Jews. What can I say? So we're not going to get up at 5 in the morning for 2 weeks to say slichos. Are you crazy? I mean, that's people are morning people. So convenience, everything's about convenience today. So it's very convenient to say slichos after. It's the same thing. This actually bothers me. I know, who cares? It's interesting what bothers me, what doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me but it bothers me that in Minhag Ashkenaz today, a lot of the shuls switched when they say Hoshanas on Sukkos. Minhag Ashkenaz says Hallel, Kriya Satorah, Musaf Hoshanas. Minhag Sfarad says Hallel Hoshanas. Now Hallel Hoshanas is much more convenient because you have your lulav and etrog, so they just continue Hoshanas. Minhag Ashkenaz, I grew up and my father was a rabbi in a conservative shul, a traditional conservative shul. We did it twice. You put your lulav back down after Hallel, and an hour later after laning and Musaf, then you did Hoshanas. Today, Minhag Ashkenaz, half the shul switched. Convenient. It's convenient. What do you mean convenient? Rav Soloveitchik goes, well, listen, what do you mean? That's a big difference. Why do we do Hoshanas? Is Hoshanas part of Hallel? Is it part of Musafas? Well, it's a different understanding of what Hoshanas is. So people don't care. People just do the. So this is another thing. It's not really halakhic. I guess my favorite one, people talk in Orthodox shuls. That's very anti-halakhic. Many conservative and reform shuls are much quieter. That's, I've always said, I'm going to get into, you can quote me on this one. This one you can quote me on. You have to stop me soon, but you can quote me on this one that, talking in shul is the worst avera than not having a mechitza in shul. It's more halachically appropriate to daven in a shul with mixed eating that is quiet than in a shul where people are noisy with a mechitza. There is no, I'm 1,000% convinced that is true, but that is the most unorthodox thing that you could ever do. The definition of orthodoxy is not to walk into a shul that doesn't have a mechitza. The definition, look what the Mishnah Berurah says about people who talk in shul. You won't go to shul. If you read what the Mishnah Berurah says about people going to shul, you're not going to go to shul anymore. I mean, that's Baruch Hashem. I must say Baruch Hashem today, there are many shuls that are really quiet. We've improved in this area. In my experience, I don't know, maybe, I don't know what I'm talking about, I've been to many Orthodox shuls where it's still very noisy, and it's a big problem. And you all know that if they were sitting next to their wives, they would not be talking as much. And their wife wouldn't let them go to the Kiddush Club in the middle of laning. It's a different, a whole different world. But in Orthodoxy, you have to have a mechitza. So somehow in Orthodoxy, it doesn't bother people that they mumble and they talk in Chazar HaShatz. You know, the Rambam got rid of Chazar HaShatz. in Musaf. Okay, I said enough because people were talking much. Okay, enough radical stuff. I don't think this is radical. I think this is basic halakha 101, but I don't know that everybody would agree with me. Okay, anyways, any questions, comments? Should we move on to Shema? Oh, so I said, I didn't get to the 8th and the 9th. We fast on the 8th and the 9th. Why is it a 3-day fast? So the 8th, we fast because the Torah was translated into Greece. So I'm not going to go into it. I've written a couple articles about that. I just think it's something to keep in mind that, Torah translations, amazing. In the article, I wrote a whole article, if anybody read it, on the 100th anniversary of Daf Yomi, which is on Rosh Hashanah this year. I mentioned when I wrote my article, I wrote it a couple weeks, like I think after Sukkot even, I don't remember exactly, but just now, like if, a couple months ago. And I was blown away. Why does nobody make a big deal that Rosh Hashanah 2023 or 5784 was 100 years since the Gera Rebbe opened up Masechet Brachot, right? Rav Meir Shapira proposed his idea of Daf Yomi at a Gudah convention in Vienna in 1923 in August, the middle of August, about 3.5 weeks or so before Rosh Hashanah. And it really, my father always told me, if not for the Gera Rebbe, Daf Yomi would have never happened. But the Gera Rebbe was the most influential rabbi in Poland in the pre-war years. That's my understanding, even though many people were not strictly Gera Hasidim looked up. Apparently, the Gera Rebbe was the most influential rabbi. And the Gera Rebbe on Rosh Hashanah opened up, Mayimitar according to Shema Barbin, and that got Daf Yomi off the ground. And it's 100 years. Nobody made a big deal about it. So I wrote a article. It's amazing. And as I Daf Yomi, all the wonderful, beautiful things. And then I discussed some of the unintended consequences of Daf Yomi. But I mentioned that Daf Yomi, really, I think anybody would agree, Daf Yomi really took off when Art Scroll. That was when Daf Yomi took off. Once Art Scroll published the Talmud in English, Daf Yomi went through the roof. In the 1980s, they had their Siyum in the felt form. Does the felt form still exist? It was a side room in Madison Square Garden. I was never there. Could hold 4,000 people, I was told, in the 1980s. Today, MetLife Stadium doesn't hold people. 92,000 people isn't enough. So it's a whole different world. But, Talmud in translation, Rav Menashe Klein, the Mishnah, the Mishnah Halachot wrote a scathing attack on Art Scroll, I believe, at the time. Nobody would do that today. Talmud in English is terrible. I could have published it in English. It's ridiculous. Every translation no translation can be perfect, and especially Talmud. If you don't know, break your head on the Talmud. If you don't know Talmud in English, go learn something else. Give me a break. So that's now, obviously, that's we look at all the positives, outweigh the negatives. But we should be aware of the negatives. We should be aware of the negatives. And the rabbis instituted a fast day when the Torah got translated into Greece. I teach and chat in English, and I much prefer teaching in English. And, and kids, when we do the psukim and chumash, whatever, I'll do it in Hebrew and English. I'll show them in English. On the one hand, it's very tragic that the kids don't know Hebrew. Hebrew's gone out everywhere. It's not, obviously they know to some extent, varying kids. Some kids, there's a Hebrew tract in chat and an English tract. But in grade 12, even the good kids, everything's in English. Whatever, it doesn't really matter. But chat, Tova, how many kids were in your class at chat in your grade? Do you have 50 kids in your grade or no?
Yeah.
50 kids in your grade.
60.
60. So you had a big class. Today, there are 1,328 kids in the school. That's 400 kids, more than 400 kids, almost 400 kids a grade. By the grade 9, they have over 400 kids and coming into the school. So the school is 6-7 times as big as it was. That's if they didn't offer Jewish studies in English, half the kids wouldn't be here. And they have a whole new stream program, which is amazing. They have 150 kids. I think there are 4 classes this year in the grade 9 alone. So like 100 kids. Kids. These are kids who didn't go to day school from grade 1 to 8 and are coming to, I think it's phenomenal. And these are kids, parents went, okay, they went to public school for 8 years and now they're in a Jewish school. And they teach them Hebrew, but obviously they learn everything else in English. Okay, just be aware of the Torah in translation. There's something negative. We can, 364 days, we can celebrate. That's great. Torah is accessible, but at least one day a year you have to fast. we have the Talmud in English and the Torah in English and Greek, obviously in Greek. And the 9th of Tishrei, I'll just say one thing. Last year we discussed, Shner
Wasn't that Ezra? You're talking about
that's what some say Ezra died, but it's a very difficult reason. The, right, that the ninth yesterday, because Ezra's yahrzeit in the new, so what? And whatever Moshe, I mean, right, that's a reason given. But if you also look, if you read Schneer Lyman's article, it'll show you that it's clear, Megillat Tanit, the source, it's clear, it's actually for sure not Ezra. The mission is that we fast on the ninth, you don't know why. And also on the ninth, Ezra died, but that's not why we fast. That's what we did. But I love, and I just think, point this out, I think this is good for all of us. The Shulchan Aruch, this is like the most neglected, not the most, I can think of one or two more neglected. But I mean, this is in the Shulchan Aruch, Or HaChaim, Siman 580. What's that? Tav Kuf Pei. Yamim Shemit Anim Behem, the days a Jew has to fast, besides the six fast. Eliyamim She'iru Behem Tzarot Lavotinu, bad things happen to our ancestors. Vafal Shisha Miksa, and even though some are on Rosh Chodesh, Yesh Mi Shomer, some say you should still fast. And then he starts listing them off. The first of Nisan. Now, everybody knows we're not allowed to fast in Nisan. Ah, we fast in Nisan because that's when Nadav and Abihu died. On the 10th, we fast because Miriam died. It's interesting. I don't know how we know that Miriam died on the 10th. Denise Lakebear, on the 25th, Yoshua died. Over and over, nobody fasts on these days. This is unheard of to fast. I don't even think it's a Midah Chassidut at all. I don't know if anybody has ever fasted on these days. I'm sure somebody did and has. Okay, then so he keeps going through. Here we go. B'kavchet b'kislev. Well, that's interesting. The middle of Hanukkah, we're fasting because Yehoyakim burned the Megillah. Amazing. Okay, that Baruch Berneri wrote from Yirmiyah. B'shmona b'tevet. On the 8th of Tevet, that was on Wednesday, the Torah was written in Greek for the first time. B'mei Talmai HaMelech, v'yach choshech ba'olam. And darkness descended for 3 days. There was a solar eclipse for 3 days. 3 days of mourning in the world that the Torah has to be translated into Greek. Amazing. Betet, I love this. Betet no noda ezit sarah she'rabo. We don't know why we're fasting. But you know, if you're a Jew, you can assume bad things happened on the night of Tevet. I don't know what they are, but something bad happened. So therefore, we should fast. I think this is such a beautiful halakha. That's Schneer Lyman's article. What do you mean? It's ridiculous. Trying to figure out what this is. But I think there's something very humbling that we have a fast day. We don't have a clue why we're fasting. We just know something bad happened. It reminds me once, Rav Schachter came into Shir once and he told us, if I remember correctly, if somebody has a calendar of every Rebbe's yahrzeit, so you don't have to say Tachanun, you know, we like to skip Tachanun. So it's the Rebbe's yahrzeit. So they have a calendar. And he said there are 4 days. They couldn't find a yahrzeit for 4 days. So Rav Schachter said, no, we say, don't say Tachanun because we're happy. Nobody died. Every other day, we don't say Tachanun because somebody died. Baruch Hashem, 4 days. Nobody died. So we're not going to say Tachanun. Anyways, okay. That's the fast of the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. Okay. Let's get to Shema, which is, you know, 45 minutes after into the shiur. Let's get back. Okay. This is our transition shiur. Oh, Zev, yes, what do you want to ask? Maybe we won't get the Shema.
Shabbat starts at sunset, right? You're not allowed to do any malacha.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. We're strict. That sunset may be the beginning.
Yeah, but don't we fast till the stars come out?
That's the question. That was the whole question.
When fasting falls on Shabbos, it's always pushed away because you don't want to fast on Shabbos. So why when a fast day falls on Shabbos, we doichi except Yom Kippur. Right. So why in this, when we have a Sarah Batavis is just a minute, do we fast on Shabbos?
Well, so that's what I said. That's what Rabbi Linger, that's what I was saying. That I think this is a good time to rely on those opinions that the fast ends at sunset. Rabbi Linger was more strict. He wanted to wait like the Vilna Gaon, 20 minutes, or Vilna Gaon is really 13 and a half minutes. He wanted to extend 20. You can read the article. It's not so important, all the details. First, if you're asking me, I'm not going to do this, okay, in practice. But again, I'm not saying this is practical halacha, but in my understanding, the fast should end at Shkia. You should be making Kiddush. You should sing Shalom Aleichem. If Shkia is at 4:44 today in Toronto, I think.
Yes.
You should say Shalom Aleichem at 4:40 and Eshet Chayil at 4:41 and say Kiddush at 4:43 so you can drink the wine at 4:44. That's what I would do. But I'm who am I? Because it's Shkia. So according to the Ramban, even Tisha B'Av ends at Shkia. So Asar B'Tevet on a Friday should end at Shkia. But so, right, but even if you're not, even if you want to be strict, so you want to be strict, say to Kochavim, you don't have to be strict like we are on Shabbos. I thought Rav Schachter went on a Monday on Som Gedalia on was lenient. After 20 minutes, good enough. So for sure on Friday Shabbos. But I'm saying the problem is all the shuls are going to finish davening because mincha is an extra. They have laning and and they're going to finish davening at 5:20 till people get home. It's 5:35. Till late, it's a quarter to six. They're eating an hour after shkia. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, whatever. Ridiculous. I mean, so right. Correct. I think it's inappropriate for a shul to end late after 5 o'clock. Yeah. If you're asking me, but nobody asked me. So, and I don't have my own shul. So, Baruch Hashem. So, good. This is where I can vent all my, feelings. If I thank you for that. Okay. Let's get back to Shmav just for a few minutes at the transition. Like I said, this is mitzvot in exile. Tish, Asar B'Tevet is the beginning of the exile. I mean, the main, why we didn't even discuss why we fast on Asar B'Tevet. They have all this other stuff. We fast because this is the day the Babylonians in 587 BC put a siege on Jerusalem. It was the beginning of the end. That's really what it is, the beginning of the end. Nebuchadnezzar, and this is the end, and the beginning of the end, that became a minhag to fast. That's like I say. Okay, so 3 weeks ago, we had the 2 week break for Hanukkah. 3 weeks ago, we spoke on Vasavta Deganecha, right? The debate between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai seems to be quite difficult. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says Vasavta Deganecha is a curse. That's only if you're not doing the will of God. So, oy nebuch, you got to gather your grain. But when things are going great, other people will do it for you. So we try to explain, how can he say that? So he said, the Torah is talking to the average person. It's a fascinating idea for the elite, sort of. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai knows not everybody's going to be learning. So, but for the elite, it's a curse. And Rav Shimon say, no, haneg v'minag derech eretz, normal, be a normal person. Every normal person should work. And they learn, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, what's going to happen to Torah? And the Gemara concludes, Har b'yasu k'Rabbi Yishmael v'al tabi yadam. Many people did like Rabbi Shimon, they worked well. Torah Mada, Torah Derech Eretz, and they went to Daf Yomi with the English translation, without the English translation, in the morning, and they learned at night, and then Baruch Hashem, and they made a nice living, and everything went well. And Har b'yasu k'Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and a lot of people went to Kolel, expecting other people are going to support them, and it didn't work out. Didn't work out. It's like the Gemara says. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that if you don't teach your child a trade, you teach him to be a thief because how's he going to make a living? It's not good. And the commentaries do point out harpe. When a lot of people go to Kolel, it fails. A minority, that works. That's that. Yes, we do need. That's the answer. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, Torah Matela. What happened to Torah if everybody's working? You're right. Not everybody should work. Well, 0.1% of the population should be in research, and they have to publish or perish, you know, to be, they should have tests and exams. You know, Rav Schechter also told us, remember, that the point of your Rav, the Rav Kahaneman, there are lots of interesting stories. He seems to be quite a fascinating person, the one who founded Ponovich. He's a very different Ponovich than today, but I assume so. In the early years, the people in the Kolel came complaining they don't pay them enough. Okay, they didn't have a lot of money. So he says, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll double your salary on condition you take a test every month. And they turned it down. And that's what Rav Schechter told us. I don't have any evidence. Rav Schechter did tell us, I remember, said that 90% of people, this is in the 80s, 90% of people in Kolel should be thrown out, and the other 10% should get 10 times as much money. And they could do the research and pay to, if they got six kids, you do real stock. You're not allowed to get paid for learning Torah. How do you, especially for learning teaching to go also, but how do we pay them? How do we pay them? So one heter to pay them is you're not paying them. They need staka. I'm not paying them. But if a person has no means of support, you have to give them, you know, staka. So how much staka do you have to give them? Depends. If they have two kids or eight kids, you give them more money when they have eight kids. For staka, you give them what they need. If you're paying them schar batel, all these other fancy heterim, there's nothing to do with it. You go to your boss, you had another kid, you know, your law, I want to raise, it'll throw you out of there, out of your mind. But if you're paying a Torah priest, because he could have been a lawyer, so also, I don't care how many kids you have, you could have been a lawyer, why would you make a Torah? That will pay him. But if you're paying him as staka, So, because he has no means, so then you got to give him more money every time he has a kid. So that's what Rav Schachter proposed, to have a very small people in Kollel. And we, everybody knows, the less people, when you have everybody, you lose the quality. The higher the quantity, the lower the quality. Everybody knows that. I mentioned, I'm sure you've heard me say it. Again, I don't have evidence, but I've heard from Yaakov Kamenetsky said when he was in Slobodka, there were 11 people in the Kollel and there were 500 people. I mean, I'm willing to take your job. It's like Lahavdil. You know, you're in Major League Baseball. There are 5,000 players in the minors who are happy to take your job. You have a couple bad outings on the mound. You're out of here, man. You get benched. You know, you're out and we'll get somebody else to do the job. If you don't produce, you're out of here. So that's the way it should be in learning. I want to sit and learn too. That's very nice, but I gotta go to work anyway. So that's that. But that should be the sucker. So ma'at harbe yasu. That doesn't work. Ma'at. Okay. So let's just talk. It's getting late, of course. Just one thing. A little shma. So we're up to benatati esa besadchal lemtecha v'chalta bit. Savata, right? I'll give bread in your natadi esa besadchal. I'll give you a. Bread, it'll be blessed. You follow the mitzvah, and everything will be beautiful. So what does that pasuk tell us? So I'll just say two things very quickly. So first of all, that's a halakha thing. I mean, I mentioned you have to feed your animals first. That's what our chachamim learned from this verse. To your animals, and then you, vachalta v'savata, you should eat and be blessed. But the animals come first; they can't take care of themselves. You got to feed your cow and your dog and your cat before. I mean, probably they're the cow. I don't think it meant the dog and the cat, but for us, it may mean the dog, you know. But people, they're sheep and they're cattle. They had to feed. That's one thing. I only thought of it this morning. Literally, as I was looking over the shear this morning, it hit me what I think the pshat in the pasuk. Benatati esev besadcha lememtecha. The grass is given to your animals. The grass is for the animals. Vachalta v'savata. You'll eat and eat other things. It's like two separate things. The animals will graze in the field, and you vachalta v'savata. You will eat. And I thought the esav v'satcha l'vemtecha. I'll give esav. I don't have it in front of me. I assume there's an etnachta on the vemtecha. If there is, that will prove my point. Is there an etnachta? I can take a quick look. But I thought the esav v'satcha l'vemtecha. And then you eat. Now, let me just leave with the question, what happened to Uberachta? Yeah, there is an etnakta, which means there's a pause. Pause. I'll give grass to your cattle. They can graze. And you'll eat. So I always sort of read it as like one thing. I'll give grass and food to your animals and to you. Like your animals first and then you. That's true on one level, but... Anyways, why doesn't it say uberachta?
Where do you want it to say it?
Avachalta v'savata uberachta.
Avachalta
v'savata uberachta. That's what we say.
What's being stressed here is the bracha from Hashem to us.
Excellent. Excellent. That's what the comment is. That answers I saw. Very good. It says, Avachalta v'savata uberachta is in Parshat Ekev. What we have to do. This is telling what God's going to do. If you listen to me, I will give you food for your cattle and food for you. I'm not telling you what to do. Then, okay, Hishamru Lechem. Then the Torah says, be very careful. You better keep this. Otherwise, you're in trouble. But this is talking about God, what God's going to do for us. So it's like, God doesn't have to bless. We're going to bless. So that's what it means. Okay. Okay. We did a little shema. So we spent a lot of time talking about why you should end the fast early today and the different levels of fast and how it changes based on historical circumstances. We have biblical fast, then we have the Yom Kippur. That's the only one. Then we have, of course, the four fasts for morning, and there are our days are only a minhag, except Tisha B'Av, which is a rabbinic law. And then we have even lower, Tanit Esther, which is not related, of course, to the Beit HaMikdash or anything like that. And we assume that in a time where it's not Geula, we're not redeemed, we're not quite what people may have thought in 1967, that we don't have to fast at all. Like Zechariah says, they will be holidays, Sason V'Simcha. Rav Soloveitchik said that will only be in Yimot HaMashiach. Because the verse then continues, Somer vi, Somer chavishi, Somer shi, Yulis asun tzimcha, Amet v'ashalom ahovu. You will love peace and truth. And we know peace and truth are contradictory, right? You have too much peace, you have to compromise, which is It's good. We can lie for peace. I'm not against that. That's good. But peace and truth are contradictory. Some people are really into truth. It's hard for them to get along with people. You know, so only in the messianic era will peace and truth be reconciled. I don't know what that means exactly, but that's how I think Rav Chaim Soloveitchik explained it. Anyway, so we still fast. And the question is, how long a day? And it relates on a few levels. One is Shabbos. Does the day end at Shkia? And even if we assume it doesn't, we're strict generally. Well, what is the definition of Seif HaKochavim? You know, what it would be, and maybe in general, you can be lenient on rabbinic laws, especially on Katzim, especially more so when it's on a Friday. That was basically, you know, we just elaborated on all that. Rabbeinu Tam is not just strict, he's lenient. Depends on Friday, he's lenient. On Saturday, he's strict. Anyways, and then just to get to Shema. So please God, next week we'll really get back into the second paragraph of Shema. Let me see if there's any questions here. For you prefer the four seasons of the Northeast. Me too. Florida's boring. Yeah, when they do, Florida's overrated. They're here, right? That's part of the weather is geschmack. Okay, that's people are into Florida. I see. Is it the only fast you charge Yom Kippur? No. Ah, so sorry. That's what I said before. The Abudraham claims that if Asar Tevet would fall on Shabbos, we would fast. But most halakhic authorities say that's not correct. I mean, as great as the Pesach is on the Seder, we don't consider the Abud Ram to be a halakhic authority. But we'll find out when we reestablish we won't find out. Because when we reestablish the calendar based on witnesses, we can cancel Asar Tevet. We'll have that's the name. So we'll never find out if that was right. Okay, from ChatGPT, members of the Brisker Yeshivas, like other Orthodox Jews, observe Asar Tevet as a minor fast day. And this day from sunrise to sunset, fasting is practice to commemorate the siege of Jerusalem and the day of repentance and reflection. There's no specific mention of Brisker Yeshiva having a unique practice. I think Chachi on the woman. In Orthodox Jews, both men and women are encouraged. I mean, this is all true in theory, although there are certain exemptions. Yeah, this in practice, GPT got it wrong. There's limits to artificial intelligence. Went to Borough Park and see how many women are fasting. I know we pick on them. They have other things to do. Somehow, whatever heter they based on, they don't fast. The Rav Chaim Briskers, and the Brisker women don't fast either. I mean, in St. Louis, there's a shul that's made a big campaign against talking to shul. Yeah, it's Baruch Hashem, it's happening, because that's a bigger problem than not having a mechitza, but obviously that's not an Orthodox view, that's just a halachic view. Reflecting on my husband's comment from Russia about the hour difference in fasting time, I'm struck by a broader contemplation on the soul's role in such ritual. Not merely about enduring another hour of hunger, fasting is a door to inner contemplation. That is correct. We are supposed to contemplate what we're doing for sure, and that's why we fast, not to fast. Fasting is just the mechanics, like the maaseh ha-mitzvah, the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah is doing tshuva, as the Rambam writes. I didn't put that Rambam in the beginning of Hilchot Tanit. You have to examine our ways, do tshuva for sure. That's why we fast. Maybe I should have emphasized more. Thank you. The strict adherence to time frame isn't about testing resilience, but still, you are correct, 100%. That being said, we don't want to extend the fast longer than we have to do, especially on Shabbos. Okay. Thank you, Janine. Okay. Who knows when? Okay. All right, everybody. I got to go.
Oh, what are they
calling? Yes.
My last father remembers.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. My father remembers Rabbi Gorelick, saying emphatically that in Grist, the women didn't fast.
Of course not. Everybody knows that. Of course they didn't fast. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
By the way,
that GPS got it wrong. GPT.
You said something before about being Mekel and Machmer. Sometimes what's Mekel is Machmer and what's not. There's a famous thing quoted by the Rav, I believe, with fasting Yom Kippur, that someone, you know, once came to him a shaila about fasting Yom Kippur because of health reasons. So the Rav was very Mekel on that. And someone says, how could you be so Mekel? Said, no, I'm not being Mekel on Yom Kippur, I'm being Machmer on Pikuach Nefesh.
Yeah, correct. That's the line they use. Right. I'm Machmer on Pikuach Nefesh. Okay, I'm sorry. I do have to go. I still have to teach. So please, God, we'll see you next week. I will be on vacation. I mean, whatever. So I'll be home so I can have more time to answer questions. But Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Monday, of course, December 25th, fascinating program. You. On Monday, December 25th, you know, on Christmas Day in Yom Kippur, all kinds of fascinating talks, and I think a great group of seven speakers, and Rabbi Liebtag on Sunday morning, of course. Okay, Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you. Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you very much.
Thank you.